We've got a story over at Coast to Coast AM that you've got to check out. It's out of Mexico, where a statue of the Virgin Mary, which was swept away by a hurricane back in 2010, has been discovered a decade later in a riverbed that became exposed by yet another storm. It was found last month when officials in the city of Monterey were surveying the damage from Hurricane Hannah. You got to check out the images and the full article right now over at coasttocoastam.com. All right, tonight it is Artificial Intelligence, the Good, the Bad, and the ET. Our guest, Isaac Arthur. When we come back after this very short, quick break, we're going to be getting to your phone calls. This is Coast to Coast AM. Stay with us. Welcome back, Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Our guest tonight, Isaac Arthur, and we're going to get to phone calls in a second. Isaac, if I was going to ask you what scares you the most about artificial intelligence, what's your reaction? What should we be afraid of?
Oh, just mostly that it might decide to not replace us or blow us up, but that we might just become completely dependent on it and just kind of end up as some kind of decadent, lazy, debauched society that doesn't really have a purpose other than to sit around and pick our noses.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. What's the movie? What's the cartoon, the animation? Wall-E.
I don't know if you've seen that movie.
You haven't seen it? I don't know what's going on, but you're cutting out at the beginning of your sentences, and I don't think it's here. We've kind of looked into it, so think about that. I don't know what it is, but it sounds strange. So let's go to the phones. Let's see who's been on hold the longest. I guess it is Tom, way up in Port Angeles, Washington. Tom, I'm going to let you know, I've been to Port Angeles a couple of times, and I like that town.
Oh, well. BLM is here, so, and they're in the city council right now trying to hammer out mandatory reporting and procedures.
Well, I bet
it's green and it's damp and it's cool.
Is the aircraft carrier still there?
Is the aircraft carrier still there? No, we don't have an aircraft carrier. That's south and west of us, by in Bremerton.
No. In Port Angeles, you guys had an aircraft carrier there a few times I was there. It was being dismantled. So that's what I was wondering. Did it ever, is it still there? They finally take that thing apart?
No, I'm not aware of that. I would be because I've been here for 20 years.
Right. Anyway. Right. Okay, there you go. Tom, what's your question for Isaac?
Isaac, the way I introduced myself to the screener was, artificial intelligence is going to have to become something other than artificial intelligence before it's intelligent. And that means a lot of front loading, right? It's going to have to come to understand fear, angst, joy, life, the things that it can probably never actually completely accomplish. But And I'll cut to the chase because you just asked the question of Eric, you know, what's your greatest fear? All right. And I have to say that, you know, my greatest fear is to how many people would sign on to this kind of bug. It's just not possible to make this thing happen that so many people would like to have it happen. I had a whole, the list is long. I mean, it just keeps going on and on and on. And it's been foreshadowed for us in a couple of films. And, you know, what happens if it gets control? What happens if it, becomes a city councilman for a while? And what happens, you know, 2, 3, 25 years down the road, it's in place and working, and it starts coming to conclusions that, you know, the meritocracy is the way to go. Its understanding of history and, you know, women no longer vote. LGBTQ, you know.
Yeah, Tom, I think we get what you are suggesting here. And I think it's an honest worry, Isaac, that what if, you know, you front load all of these things into it, you know, fear, happiness, and but it just, it goes in the wrong direction and the wrong decisions are made. It, you know, it just becomes disastrous. It's not in our control.
Oh, yeah. Definitely a concern, but that's what prototyping is all about. If you've got the thing out there and you start feeding stuff like that into it and it's going completely nuts, then you probably don't start giving it control over any of your systems or decision-making. On the other hand, if it can maintain something appearance of sanity while it's dealing with us, then it probably did maintain sanity. We won't really know until we start playing around with that, and it might be that there's only a very narrow range of consciousness or contemplation that actually allows it to be sane. You know, it could be that what we think of as intelligence is a, you know, or sanity is a very tiny little plateau along the intelligence tree. And if you're much smarter or much left or right of where we are consciously, that it just doesn't work.
Thank you for the phone call, Tom. And I think those are great points. And we were discussing earlier about the ability to get out in front of us and know that how we would unplug it from the wall or not plug it into the internet, or, you know, these different cautions and considerations. But wouldn't, because, how should I say this? It would have to make a backup of itself. It could literally upload itself onto thousands or millions of servers around the world, and unplugging one wouldn't do any good.
Possibly. Although it might have the same copy issue we have with that. You say we could upload our brain to a computer, but unless that's a destructive process, you're still sitting there in that chair after it scanned your brain. It might not really want to make copies of itself because those will all divulge from it, and that might just be creating additional rivals if it had ill intent. You know, it might not think of those as copies, but just kids, too.
Ah, exactly. You would have millions of opposition. Right. That would be plotting its own plot just like you would. That's kind of a paradox, isn't it?
Well, if you are an artificial intelligence that thinks it can take on the entire human race by itself, then the entity you're most afraid of is a copy of yourself that doesn't happen to agree with your, you know, goals in the universe because its biggest goal is self-survival, too. So at that point in time, it might be that you make a bunch of copies of your artificial intelligence brain, and they all go to war with each other.
Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. Let's go to first-time caller Alec in Louisiana. Alec, you're up next on Coast. Welcome.
Hey, how you guys doing? Yeah, so whenever I hear the subject or topic of artificial intelligence, I get a little bit, I guess, anxious because I get concerned because I don't see how this won't be blowing up in our faces eventually. I don't see any pros to this. Why continue to pursue the advancement of artificial intelligence? I feel like eventually scientists and engineers will hit a roadblock and be like, wow, hold on, I think we made a mistake continuing this research. I don't see how this is going to end up positive for us. Why continue to pursue the advancement of artificial intelligence?
So you're thinking no matter what, it's going to turn out bad. And I get your point, Alec, but Isaac, is it an example of entropy, right? No matter how we plan this out, no matter how much we test and prototype and think through it, entropy is always the end.
Everything's got to, you know, face that one down the end. And I think the biggest project any civilization is going to have is how it's going to deal with entropy. But, you know, he's very right about the point that there's almost no really good scenarios for building human level in artificial intelligence. There could be a few decent ones. But one thing to keep in mind is that every time we have a new child, a new generation, we are effectively, you know, destroying our previous civilization. That's kind of what we do. It just seems like more of an extreme case when we're talking about going to a machine intelligence. But, you know, this is not going to be a single isolated case of one AI setting up. There's going to be a whole bunch of different AI that are partway as advanced as that thing is that are going to be in play. And probably a lot of other technologies, too, like potentially mind augmentation that may, you know, might just kind of, I don't want to say level the playing field, but put a lot more players on that field.
So by putting it like that, I mean, certainly entropy coming into the picture, that would apply to everything, the universe, our planet, our cities, even our individual lives, all start off simple and complex and then, you know, run off the tracks and come apart. Entropy is what it is. But for you to say and agree with Alec that no matter what, in the end, it's probably going to have a bad result.
I mean, I guess it depends on how we define that. If you were to take our founding fathers from 200 years ago and show them our civilization, they'd either be overawed with all of our accomplishments or horrified. And certainly if we look back a few centuries before that, you know, same thing. The critical thing to keep in mind, though, is a civilization doesn't have to do artificial intelligence. You tend to go a long enough period of time, someone's going to mess around with them and play with it, but not necessarily. And you know, we talk about artificial intelligence research these days. We're not talking about anything approaching human intelligence or even what we think of as mammal intelligence. And you could use things like, how smart does your robot vacuum cleaner really need to be? Does it need to be as smart as a dog? Probably not. But are we worried about a dog inventing a better version of a dog and replacing us? So you only have to deal with artificial intelligence at a human level or superhuman level if you actually decide to go down that path. And it's not likely to just happen by accident. There's too much of a sci-fi tendency to assume we're just going to do it by accident and it's going to surprise all the researchers. I don't think that's going to be the way that plays out. It could, but one thing we do see, though, is while 20 years ago I would say don't worry too much about AI, we have to keep advancing computers, you see more and more people in the future as in game, be it Elon Musk or myself or a bunch of others, saying be really careful with artificial intelligence. This is not something to be casual about, but it's something we should be still continuing for now. 10 years from now, we might say, all right, we're good enough. We don't need any more smarter computers. They're good enough as is, and say, stop. And that might be all it takes, because it takes a lot of funds and resource and teamwork to advance this sort of thing.
Why is it that society looks at the engineers and developers and the code writers as malevolent, right? That they have bad plans with artificial intelligence and computer research.
We blame Hollywood.
Right?
Most folks who are involved in research and development are very, very similar to everybody else who's alive, except that they are very genre savvy. They will usually have watched all the movies and read all the books that talk about the dangers of these things, too. They are not going to be a bunch of people who are just ignoring the problem. And maybe one individual researcher might be like that, but all this stuff is done as teams these days. And so someone is going to say, hey, this is really dangerous. And, you know, Congress can always stop in and say, you know, we're going to start regulating this, and we really have to convince us this next step is worth flipping the switch on if we're going to do it.
Well, and the other part where so much is discussed about uploading and immortality and putting yourself on a chip and Bill Gates living forever and Elon Musk and what have you. But at the point of that upload, if that it does, you know, you're Neuralinked up with Elon Musk, and you're uploading yourself onto a chip, you, Isaac Arthur, are not experiencing the world of Tron, are you? It's a new you on that chip. You, Isaac Arthur, are still you out here in our 3D world, right? It's kind of a misconception about what is going on here. We don't get to go to Disneyland and live in the world of Tron. These are new beings that are created, right?
Yep. And people ask me, would you do mind uploading yourself? I'd say, well, yeah, I probably would if it was non-destructive and fairly test out process, but not because it's a way of extending my life. I'm still there in my mortal body. There might be other ways to continue my existence, but at the same time, that new me, who is me too, I suppose, that's a different me, though. And I might do something like that for the same reason a lot of people might do something like that, which say, I've got projects I'm working on in life that I'd like to know were taken care of if I died. So I'm not doing an uploaded copy of myself as a backload of me. I'm doing it to make sure someone's still watching over my family, making sure the channel episodes come out, that kind of thing.
Right.
That might be a very common way of doing that. And I don't think you'd ever flip that on. Why would you? You'd flip it on if something happened to you, not to run it simultaneously because they'll get different interests.
But you wouldn't know, right? You wouldn't know if it was flipped on because your mortal body is completely separate. How do we overcome that? I want to live in the world of Tron. So how would we do it? Would we have to do it like one memory cell at a time? You know, one would dissolve and one would increase. I don't know.
Maybe you have a bunch of little nanorobots in your head that are fixing up neurons, and they just replace them with the artificial machine versions as it goes. But the same technology that lets you replace a neuron with a small little computer chip as one decays is the same one that presumably lets you just fix a regular old neuron. And they're pretty solid tested technology, so you might just say, repair the neuron, and now you're biologically immortal, not uploaded. But there is a lot to be said about gradual consciousness. I mean, that goes back to the basic John Locke idea of consciousness, which is that it's just continuity of identity.
Right.
That, you know, the tree from the seed to the tree is one conscious, well, not conscious, but the identity is maintained. But then when we cut it down and turn it into a table or a bunch of tables, now that has been broken. It's still the same tree in that table, but it's not the same object anymore, which can get pretty arbitrary, obviously.
So what would happen if the nanobots are doing the deconstruction, right? Right? They're deconstructing and reassembling on the chip. Do you become dumber, right? You slowly phase out. Your mind would, and then what happens to your body? Is your heart still pumping, right? Do you still have blood in your veins, or does all of this just shut off?
If it's the idea is just to replace the bits inside your brain with new neurons right in there that just happen to be, you know, mechanical versions or digital versions, then presumably your organic brain is getting dumber, but you don't really notice because just half your neurons are artificial and the other half are organic, and it slowly trends to artificial with time. That presumably maintains a feeling of conscious identity. I'm not really sure how that's fundamentally different from doing them all simultaneously, but
right.
Because you have version people perform more.
Yeah, you understand what I'm saying. It would be the tipping point. Once you get to 50-50, then you're dumb on both sides, right? You're half smart. And then it would increase, and then you would get your intelligence back until you, right? Yeah, wow. It's messing with me.
What consciousness really is. In many ways, a human mind is like a hive organism already. You know, it's you got billions of neurons in your head and billions of cells, and some of them aren't even human DNA in your body. I think most of the cells in the human body are not actually human cells. But
yeah, let's take a break right here. Yeah, that's a good point to stop. This is Fate to Black. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. It's never a complete night without that slip up. We'll be right back after this short break. Stay with us. All right, welcome back. If you dig what I do here, because I do, check out my show. It's called Fade to Black. It's very simple to get to. Just click on my name over at Coast to Coast AM. It'll take you straight to my website, jimmychurchradio.com. We broadcast Monday through Thursday from 7 to 10 p.m. live Pacific time, right before Coast to Coast AM. When I'm done with Fade to Black, 10 p.m., you roll right over here and continue with your late night paranormal, conspiracy, UFO, ghost, life after death, lost history talk with George Norrie right here. It's very simple. You can follow me on Twitter at J Church Radio. I'm a big social media guy, and all of the updates and everything that we do happens right there in Twitter every single day. All right, with that, I'm going to get out of here to a quick break and come back to more of your phone calls with Isaac Arthur. Artificial Intelligence tonight on Coast to Coast AM. We'll be right back. Welcome back, Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Our guest tonight, Isaac Arthur. Isaac, you ready to get straight back to the phones?
Yep.
All right, let's do this. Oh, before we do that, I wanted to ask you, can you let everybody know how often you are putting out new episodes over at Future Science of Futurism with Isaac Arthur?
Well, we do a release every Thursday morning around 8 or 9 o'clock Eastern time, and we tend to have a live stream once a month and a bonus episode about once a month, too. So about six times a month on average.
And the live stream is you taking questions and calls, right?
Oh, yeah, it's just a Q&A session. It's from the chat window on YouTube. We haven't quite got the point of being able to do phone calls yet, but maybe one day.
Oh, I'll show you how to do it so I can call in. But your information is incredible, and you've got a pretty good – who does most of the writing and the research?
Mostly me, though there's a lot of volunteers who help out on the show who are better experts on certain topics than I am. We will sometimes lend a hand on writing a script, and there's a lot of folks who help edit it, too. But most of the research and writing is done by myself.
And the animation and the way that the episodes are put together, I've watched them evolve, but you guys are getting really, really slick.
We try. There's a lot of animators who give a hand on that, and we've gotten better access to a lot of better software, better footage as the years have gotten by, too.
Well, the popularity of the channel shows. You and I have discussed this so many times over the years, but I jumped in very early on, and I've watched the growth and the support that you have throughout the community, and it's very impressive, man. Congratulations. It's a lot of work that you put in.
Thanks, Jimmy. It's a lot of fun too. So
let's see who's on the phone. Who's on hold? Let's go to Elaine in Fort Myers, Florida. Elaine, welcome to Coast.
Hi. I guess I'm going back to the basics. I just think that us as human beings that just absolutely do not have the capability at all to comprehend what is going on in the universe, the forces that created it, or the energy that created it, or anything really about it. We just absolutely don't have the capability of understanding any of that. So therefore, I think the artificial intelligence is a minuscule thing, and I'm sure it doesn't mean anything in the long run, and I hope it doesn't damage us more, because I just think that we just have absolutely no concept and are not able to understand everything that's going on with the universe, how we were created, or how anything really is.
No, I get it too, Elaine, and thank you for the phone call. We are just, and that, Isaac, she brings up one of the best points that I try to drive home. We have the ability to, as different from any other species on the planet, we have the ability to ponder an atom, right? To think about the components of an atom, but yet we can look out to the vastness of space and wonder about that too. We may not understand it, but we are certainly trying to, aren't we?
Well, certainly give me a try. And we could be deluding ourselves into thinking we understand things far better than we do. And it may even be an impossible task to truly understand it all. But the greatest thing about being human, and probably the worst thing about being human too, is you get to actually spend time thinking about these things. So it's the source of every existential crisis, but it's also a source of a lot of, things that we just get to enjoy that, animals don't get to, too. All that deeper contemplation about, life, the universe, and everything is a great joy and a great test. And hopefully we're not fooling ourselves into thinking we understand the universe much better than we really do.
Yeah, I totally agree. What I really enjoy is the philosophical questions and the philosophical side of all of this, to me, is just as interesting as the scientific and physics side and the technical side. The two of them used to be the same, right? 1,000 years ago, it was the same thing. Today, we've got this great divide in the middle, and the philosophical side just fascinates me. Let's go out west. Let's go to Craig in Vancouver. Craig, you're up next on Coast. Welcome.
Hi, Jimmy. Thanks for taking my call, and thanks to Premier Networks. iRobot, written by Isaac Asimov. We've got the two Isaacs here tonight. Had three laws, and I don't know if Isaac's familiar with them. The first law was the robot may not injure a human through inaction or allow a human being to come into harm. The second law was must obey orders given it by human as long as it didn't conflict with the first law. And the third law was a robot must protect its own existence as long as it does not conflict with the other laws. I wonder if Isaac has read that book, and maybe a better question is how many times. I've read it a couple of times. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thank you, Craig. Isaac sleeps with that book.
This is technically true, as it is on a shelf in my bedroom. I'm actually, well, my parents named me after both Asimov and Newton for the first name, but I'm a big fan of Isaac Asimov. And yeah, I read pretty much everything. Well, I wouldn't say everything by Asimov because he wrote like 500 books, but I've read that book at least many, many times.
But referencing back to the three laws, are those even considered today when we're talking about artificial intelligence and considerations of the future? Or is it just science fiction and it's cute?
A little bit of both. It's always the basic template we use. If you think about it, back in, I think it was one of the short stories in there, Liar, Liar, they point out that that's not the actual stuff coded into the robot's head. That's just the abridged form they use for discussing it. But we couldn't really give a robot those three laws and have it actually function unless it was very, very intelligent. And it has to have some way to discriminate levels of priority as to how much damage versus how much obedience. It can't be one over the other all the time. As an example, if you take a kid and a robot, you say, protect my child no matter what. And it says, oh, that dog over there is a potential non-zero threat to this kid, so I'm going to shoot that dog.
Right.
Because, of course, there's a finite chance that dog might hurt the kid, and now you have a traumatized child on your hands. So to really be able to do a lot of the three law stuff, it has to be as smart as a human. And so it's a good basic template, but there was a lot of problems with the three laws. You know, they make for great fiction, and they make a good basis of discussion, but they can't be instrumented just as is.
Let's go to Wildcard, Hal in Midland, Texas. Hal, you're up next on Coast. Welcome.
Hey, thank you so much.
Hal, what's your question for Isaac?
Comment. And my comment had to do with consciousness and love. And the billions of years that consciousness has advanced beyond us, in front of us, that consciousness, the intelligence of the universe, was there billions of years before we were here. And they have advanced love and understanding and a comprehension beyond anything we can advance. And that the love is there for us if we will appreciate it.
I would agree with you, Hal. And Isaac, this is one of the questions that everybody wants to discuss. And it's a simple one. E.T. would have evolved past wars and killing and hate, and would have evolved into a higher consciousness about, you know, a light being of love, and would understand that that is the way of the future, and killing yourself off and others and your neighbors is not the way to go. Would you assume that that's what E.T. would be about? That they wouldn't be, you know, if they wanted to eliminate us, they would have done it already. So is it natural to assume that E.T. is now about love and consciousness has evolved throughout the universe?
Well, it's possible, and it's certainly preferential to some of the alternatives. But it's
right.
Thing to keep in mind when we discuss all these things is people often say, well, they'd be so far beyond us, we'd be like ants to them. And say, at a certain level of intelligence, you take a much greater interest in ants than, like, say, well, cats often are very interested in ants. But, you know, we appreciate things at a smaller, stupider scale than us a lot better than things that are just a little bit stupider than us do. If you are something like the Matryoshka brain that we discussed earlier, where you're just hyper-intelligent, it's important to keep in mind, something like that could simultaneously carry on a phone conversation with every person alive. You know, so it has a lot more brain power, and it could use a very tiny portion of that to basically be in touch with everybody constantly, talking to them all constantly, and appreciating them all constantly. So if its morality is anything like ours, it probably is actually a much nicer entity than you or I are, assuming that niceness is what somebody told me is a good idea. It might be horribly ruthless and evil for all we know.
Right. Well, and looking at us like ants, I don't necessarily prescribe to that. And the reason is we are not ants. we have evolved. We have moved beyond fire, right? Ants, we can't teach, you know, how to use the internet or cell phones or how to drive cars. Aliens visiting
people devoted to talking to ants or studying ants, if they could talk to them, they would.
Right, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. But ET arriving here, we may not understand everything about ET, but certainly they can communicate and teach us things. They are not speaking to or observing a civilization that can't understand. So no, I think they would find us very, very interesting. We have time for one more call. Let's go to first-time caller line Michael in Toledo, Ohio. Michael, welcome to Coast to Coast.
Hello.
Well, Michael,
can you hear me?
Yes, welcome. What's your question for Isaac?
Well, a wonderful imaginary thing, quantum computers and how they're related to the mind.
Okay.
I think that we went through the whole night discovering how serial computing gets to nothing, but quantum computing can solve many puzzles, and it's almost like it's alive.
Well, theoretically, and this is something that Isaac and I have discussed many, many times over the last few years, Michael, and you bring up a really good point, but I think that quantum computing theoretically can be amazing. But we are a long ways away, aren't we, Isaac?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the issue with quantum computing is your level of processing is fundamentally based on how many atoms you can keep entangled at once. And that is a very, very difficult thing just to keep two of them entangled. And trying to do 1,000, which is, I think, about as good as we can do right now, is a lot harder. Theoretically, you can do way more of them, but... You know, we don't want to just constantly assume that quantum computing is going to outperform classic computing in every area. It's going to be way better for certain things, but it's not necessarily going to be better at everything. And we also kind of want to be careful with quantum computing and consciousness, because there's a decent chance that the human brain does operate to some degree at a quantum level. You got options like OrcOr from Penrose.
Right.
But at the same time, a lot of it probably is more mechanistic. Neurons are very big compared to the quantum scale. It's like a skyscraper compared to a brick, if a brick's an atom.
Right. And let's just say that, how do I put this into words? Let's just say that we achieve the technical hurdles that are in front of us with quantum computing. It's also another set of languages. It's another way to have to write all of this computer code, and we have all of the experience that we have accumulated in normal computing, and quantum is a whole nother, it's just a whole nother segment of everything that we're not even close to what we have achieved already.
Yeah, we have had to reinvent pretty much every algorithm we use on it to work better on quantum, and some of them don't have good analogies. Some of them are very easy to do. Those take a lot more work. So quantum computing, big deal for the future, but how much of a big deal and how long is, you know, we can't just assume it's going to be like it was with the current computers where they were doubling every year for a while. And even that's kind of petered out. Moore's law is pretty dead at this point.
Now, I would be remiss not to mention this, and thank you for the phone call, Michael. That was absolutely perfect. Is this, Isaac, you've written a lot about the Fermi paradox. I've only got 90 seconds, but I need your quick answer here. You've written a lot about the Fermi paradox. You know, if we've got all of these stars and planets out there and advanced civilizations, well, where is everybody? But over the last 2 years and going down to the last 2 months, there's been a lot of coverage in the media about UFOs and UAPs and contact and the Navy and what they know and secret programs. Has this changed your mind about the Fermi paradox? And do we have a new episode coming up?
We actually do have a new episode coming up on that. I just want to pull, so I have to talk about that UFO, but I've still got a month or two to formulate a plan because it's going to be that long writing it. I'm revisiting the topic. I don't want to say what my view on it is right now because I just haven't researched as much as I should have of late. So I don't think I was too shocked by it because to me it's just we have already got a lot of evidence along those lines. It's pretty impressive. And, you know, it's just looking at this and seeing what's really different than the evidence we've had before. So I've got to think about it more, but I think I'm probably going to stay about where I am on the skepticism tree there.
Yeah, well, you and I have pushed the boundaries on this issue. Do you think it would you change your point of view about visitations from other worlds if the Navy says, hey, yeah, we've got proof?
Probably. I mean, I'd hope so. If you're presented with evidence, then you should be able to change your point of view on that. Otherwise, you're not a scientist.
That's exactly right. Isaac Arthur, you are the very best. Isaac's website, isaacarthur.net. The links are over at Coast to Coast AM. Isaac, I look forward to our next chat. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on, Jimmy. Good night.
Isaac Arthur. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. This concludes our simulated show. I want to thank Mike, Donna, Chris, Sean, Tim, Lex, George, Lisa, Stephanie, and my beautiful wife, Rita. Until next time, I am your host, Jimmy Church. This is Coast to Coast AM. Go Beckley Tepe.